This podcast may contain content that may be alarming or triggering to some listeners, including suicide, violence, trafficking, adolescent pregnancy, and homelessness. Please check the show's notes for more detailed descriptions and take care of yourself. Welcome to Red Bean Baby, where the only thing more New Orleans than red beans and rice on a Monday is Red Bean Baby, the podcast that discusses parenting at Covenant House. Red Bean Baby is your opportunity to hear conversation amongst those with lived experiences and subject matter experts on a variety of social justice and public policy issues. Covenant House New Orleans is dedicated to serving all youth with unconditional love and absolute respect, helping youth experiencing homelessness, and protecting and safeguarding all youth in need. I'm your host, Joya, a former resident and parent of Maternal Pathways at Covenant House New Orleans, bringing you all the guests and topics surrounding youth, life without housing, first-time parents, and so much more. So grab your cafe au lait and settle in for another episode of Red Bean Baby. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Red Bean Baby podcast. My name is Joya, and I am your host, and I am sitting here today with Miss Melanie Richardson from Training Grounds. How are you today?
I am doing well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well as well.
Good.
Yeah, and I just want you to talk a little bit about who you are and what you do at Training Grounds and about Training Grounds and how you got involved with Covenant House.
Okay. So who am I? That's such a loaded question. Who am I? So my name's Melanie Richardson. I am the co-founder and executive director of Training Grounds, which is a New Orleans-based nonprofit that was started in 2016.
Okay.
And Training Ground works with parents and caregivers to create quality early childhood learning experiences for children birth to five.
Because
we know so much brain development happens during those first 5 years.
Yep.
We wanted to create a system that supported and encouraged parents and caregivers during those first 5 years. And I got connected with Covenant House years ago when I was working with another agency. And we would come over and do some things with Covenant House and with the parents at Covenant House. And when I left that agency to start Training Grounds, I was fortunate enough to keep those relationships at Covenant House. And we were able to develop and foster our own connection with Covenant House and continue the work that we're doing.
Okay, nice, nice. And I heard you say that 0 to 5 age limit. Why is that those first couple of years so vital to a child's development and their future success?
Right. So the first 5 years, within the first 5 years, about 90% of a child's brain is developed. So they're making a ton of connections during those first 5 years that lays the foundation for all the years to come, okay. Right? So when we think about third grade reading scores, we have to remember that that didn't start in third grade, right? It started during those early years when we're talking about serve and return, mm-hmm. when parents are talking to children and listening to children, when they're developing their vocabulary and their language skills,
mm-hmm.
their receptive and expressive language. So if we want third grade reading scores to be on grade level, then we need to make certain that their language development is happening from day one.
Right.
So at 6 months, at 9 months, at 12 months, because all of that feeds into where they're ultimately going to be.
Okay. Okay. And I heard you say about development. I've also taken a chance to look at the page. And I noticed that you talk about a lot of parenting styles as well on the page. What type of parenting styles or what advice would you give towards parenting styles that are, I guess, under the umbrella for their children? Because if I'm a parent and I see that it's okay to put my child in a timeout, but my child may not respond to timeouts or to 2 minute penalties or whatever, what type of parenting style when it comes to their development, or even just like helping them navigate through whatever their little minds are thinking about at that time? How could you help them figure out what their parenting style is?
Right. So I would say, especially during the early years, right, those first 3 years of a child's life, those first 1,000 days, as we would say, mm-hmm. it's really about being supportive, encouraging, attentive, making certain that you're responding to their needs, right? It's mm-hmm. not, at that point, we're not talking discipline. We're not talking structured timeouts and things. What we're really doing is talking about how do we support them emotionally mm-hmm. so that they can then develop into children who have the ability to self-regulate, the ability to have self-control. Mm-hmm. But during those first 3 years, we really just want to love on them and be attentive mm-hmm. and listen to them, respond to their needs. You know, one of the things that I see that I think is a big misconception during the first years is that people are like, well, I want to let them cry because I want them to become independent. Mm-hmm. I want them to develop, you know, that independence. And what that really does is it does just the opposite. Children build a sense of independence mm-hmm. when they can trust that their needs are going to be met. So if I cry and you respond to me, then I learn that, you know what? Yes, I cry. And I may actually be able to self-regulate or self-soothe myself because I know you're going to respond to me. Mm-hmm. But if I cry and I cry and I cry and no nothing. One comes, then I can't trust that people are going to be there to support me. And that has lifelong implications. Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't just stop, okay, because now they're a year. Like, that impacts their ability to formulate relationships and to trust other adults. So it's really important for me, and why I do the work I do with the first couple of years is because it really is setting the foundation for the rest of a child's life. During the first 18 months, if their needs aren't being met, then they're creating what Erickson, a famous psychologist, talks about trust and mistrust. Mm-hmm. And during the first 18 months is when children learn, can I trust you or not trust you? And that to me is amazing that it happens during the first 18 months mm-hmm. of a child's life.
Because that's barely, a little over a year, a year and a half.
Exactly. But they've already started to understand, I can trust the people in my circle because they respond to me. When I cry, when I'm hungry, when I'm hurt, mm-hmm. they're going to comfort me. They're going to support me. They're going to be here for me. Or I've learned in those 18 months that when I cry, I have to fend for myself. I can't trust people. You're not going to respond to me. You're not going to be there for me. And then they start to have to figure out other ways to begin to build relationships.
Wow. That's funny you say that, because I literally said a while back, like, I would get burned out and my kids would be crying. And, like, someone told me, like, it's okay to give them a couple minutes and then return to them. So, like, what advice would you give a new parent, especially during those critical developmental stages in your child's life?
I think it's important to understand what is developmentally appropriate, mm-hmm. right? Letting a 2-day-old cry is not the same as letting a 3-year-old cry for a little bit, right? Absolutely. And so when we give blanket advice like, oh, let them cry, they'll be okay, it really depends on their age, their development, and what they're, you know, where they are at that particular point. So I would tell parents, new parents, to really understand what is developmentally appropriate for children. Right. There's a ton of information out there on the CDC website. You have a ton of information out there with pathways that says, OK, at 2 months, this is what we expect. And it's a generalization because we give or take. Every child doesn't develop exactly at the same rate. However, they all develop in the same way. Mm-hmm. Right. So most children are not going to start walking before they hold their head up. Right. So understanding what is developmentally appropriate and at what age we should have certain expectations for children. Mm-hmm. And I think that that would help parents to eliminate some of their frustration.
Right.
Because we're expecting things from children that just we shouldn't be because it's not capable. They're not capable of doing it. Mm-hmm. And then I think it strengthens the child's trust in you because you're not asking them to do things that they're not capable of doing.
Wow. Well, that's great advice, actually, because I know, like, I have a nephew and everybody's so worried about what's his spectrum and, you know, where is he? Is he going to be this and is he going to be that? And, like, sometimes I have those little spur of the moments where he's, like, sitting next to me and he'll say a whole word and I'm like, you talk, don't you? And he just looks at me and nods his head and we laugh, like, so hard because everyone is saying the same thing. And he's not even three yet, so he hasn't even really fully, you know, gotten, like you said, to his developmental point where he's probably, he knows a lot, but he's just not in the moment to actually say words.
And I think that that's really important for parents to understand. It's like, by the time a child is about 18 months, they should have about 10 to 15 words in their vocabulary. Mm-hmm. By the time they're three, they should have 1,000 words in their vocabulary. If they're not saying 1,000 words at three, then how can we expect them at four to have 4,000 words? Mm-hmm. And if they're not saying 4,000 words at four, then how can we expect them to be reading on grade level in third grade? Right. So understanding, right, at 18 months, my child should have about 10 to 15 words in his vocabulary is crucial. And if they don't, then we need to be paying attention. Are we talking enough? Are we reading enough? Are we doing the things that they need to do, mm-hmm, so that we can elevate their vocabulary and their language skills? Because that's going to really set the tone for everything. We're not going to go from 100 words at three to 4,000 words at four. But that's what the expectation is. And so I think if parents understood what was developmentally appropriate, mm-hmm, then we can start intervening earlier. We can start actually putting things in place to make certain that, yes, is this developmental? Is this just environmental, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's a difference between developmental and environmental.
Right.
So having that understanding can really help children have a unbelievable start in the right direction from day one, right?
Yeah.
Because if your 2-month-old isn't gripping your hand, your finger, then that's an indication that maybe their motor skills might not be developing. If they're not sitting up at 6 months, mm-hmm, then that's an indication that maybe their core isn't strong. And guess what? If their core is not strong, then they're not going to walk. Right. So if we know that at 6 months they should be sitting up and they're not, then we can start doing things to help develop those muscles so that at 12 months or at 15 months they can be walking.
Yeah. Well, that's great advice, especially for me, and especially knowing I still have babies constantly coming into my family when they ask for advice. I can say, well, I learned that you should be doing this to make sure they're on track. But what's some advice that you've gotten just in general that you feel like, hey, this is like really, really good advice?
Oh, my goodness. As I was preparing, growing up, my mom always read this poem to me, Don't Quit. Right. And Don't Quit is a poem that I've passed on to my son. And what I like, and I actually have a verse that I wanted to read, if you don't mind, kind of the first part of it.
Yeah.
And it starts off, when things go wrong, as they sometimes will, when the road you're trudging seems all uphill, when the funds are low and the debts are high, and you want to smile, but you have to sigh, when care is pressing you down a bit, rest if you must, but don't you quit.
That is amazing.
And that has always been, like, even as a professional,
yeah,
even as an executive director that is responsible for people being paid and services being continued, it's like, rest if I must. But quitting is not an option.
I love that.
And so I think that I've just always taken that with me. And I hope my son will eventually one day, a long time from now, pass on to his children.
Yeah. Hopefully, because that's amazing. I might have to go back and get that poem. And who's that poem by?
It's actually, for as long as I've known it, it was by an unknown author.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've given it an author. I don't go by that author because I was always told that it was an unknown author. So,
right.
Unknown author.
Unknown
we'll put it
author.
That way.
All right. Well, we are definitely going to have to keep that in not just our back pockets, but I'm definitely going to have to expose my children to that. Because even as like in their ages, because they're past the developmental stages, they still have this, oh, I didn't do this right. And I'm just like, it's fine. It's okay. Rome wasn't built in a day and you're still human. Try again. Like, yeah. It's fine. But I love that. That's literally everything I say to them.
And what I want to say, like, really developmental stages never, ever stop.
I'm glad, like, you said that as
they
well.
They never, like, understanding developmental milestones and what children are going through. So there are certain things that 16-year-olds are going to experience, right? Yeah. I know my focus is typically on birth to five, but when you get to children between 14 and 16, there's this need for adventure.
Mm-hmm.
There's this need for risk-taking, and it's going to happen. So as parents, as caregivers, as adults, how do we create appropriate risk-taking behavior for them? Because developmentally, they have to go through it. They're not going to not go through it, just like a 2-year-old is not going to go through some of the oppositional and challenging, right? That's just part of the developmental process. Well, between 14 and 16, they're going to go through risk-taking behavior. Yeah. So if we know that as parents, how can we create an environment for safe risk-taking behavior?
Quote, unquote, the rebellious state.
Right. And so how do we create those? So I want parents to understand, like, yeah, we talk a lot about developmental milestones and meeting your milestones when they're birth to five, but they're developmental milestones throughout your lifetime.
Yeah. That's a lot. That is, it's a lot to unpack, because now that you're saying that, I can definitely see that now. Like, even now being on the verge of 30, you know, just seeing like where I was even in my earlier 20s to where like my mindset is bringing me at almost 30 is like truly, I can say inspirational, but it really does blow my mind, like how much you grow in those stages, like even now just growing. And then I'm pretty sure by the time I'm 50, I'm gonna be like, you know what, I just need me a little house off to the side, a couple trees, and that's it. Like, you know, you don't expect all the things you expect like at 14 and 16. That's why I said the quote unquote rebellious stage, because right. I know I've definitely been there.
And you know, and I'm glad that you said that, and I'm glad that you said specifically 30, right? Because we know from brain science that the prefrontal cortex doesn't fully develop until somewhere between 25 and 29, right? And the prefrontal cortex is what is responsible for making sound decisions and being able to understand real consequences, to be able to really self-regulate in a way that is adulting, right? And so I think about the time, and I tell people, I use this example, I think about when I went out with my friends at 19 and the chances and risk that we were willing to take compared to when I went out with my friends at 39.
Yeah.
And it's like, they're very different. I'm the same person, same spirit, but because my prefrontal cortex has developed, I have these experiences, then I see the world a little bit different.
Yeah.
And I think that that's an important thing as well for parents to know, is that, yes, your child may sometimes understand what you're asking and they may follow the rules. But because the prefrontal cortex is still developing, it is not fully developed where we want it to be. There's going to be a lapse in judgment from time to time. That's when we take the opportunity to teach. And that's all the way up to almost 30.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they did a study, and people, they looked at in the military who received the Purple Hearts for going out and saving. And it was really people between 18 and 22.
Oh, wow.
Right? Because their prefrontal cortex isn't telling them that that's dangerous.
Right. It's just like, that person's hurt. Go get them.
Go get them. And they're not thinking about my family or my children. Like, there's, the mind isn't there. And so at one point, a lot of Purple Hearts were going to people under 25 years old.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that. That's something. And of course, I know that myself now at 29 and myself when I was 1 year old definitely is not on the same mental, physical, anything capacity. Like, they can't really agree. But within that first year of growth and success for a child's life to impact down the road, how important is that?
It sets the tone. It really does set the tone for everything. I mean, remember, you're learning so much in those first 365 days, that first year, right? You're learning facial expressions. You're learning emotions. You're learning how to operate in a world and you've only been there for 365 days. I mean, think about that. Like, that to me is just always just kind of gets me in awe. Like, yeah, you know, when we talk about the first 1,000 days or 3 years old, it's like, man, they've only been here for 1,000 days. And I tell parents that all the time, like, you know, he knows better. I'm like, for real? He's been here for 900 days. Like, really? Like, right. You've been here for like thousands of days.
And you still don't know better.
And you still make mistakes. Like, so with this child who's only been here less than 1,000 days, does he really know it?
Yeah.
And so I think that just recognizing that that first year is really, really, really important and setting the tone for what how your children are going to see you from a mistrust and trust, how they're going to interact with other people, mm-hmm. right? Their language is going to set the tone for their ability to communicate later in life as well. So the first year really sets the tone for trust, mistrust, attachment. The first 5 years is really setting the tone for how they're going to interact and approach the world for, you know, for years and years to come.
Yeah. And what's been the most, one of the most memorable moments in your career working with infants and parents so far?
Oh, you know, I was thinking about my time at Covenant House and when we were actually, when I was coming into Covenant House and working with parents, we were doing handprints and footprints for the children. Aww. And what I realized is that many of the parents had never done that themselves.
Really?
And so to be able to say, you know what, then take off your shoes, put your hands and let's get your handprints. And we're going to put your handprints and their handprints inside of your handprint. There's just certain experiences that you want as a parent. Like these are, those were, they were telling me, oh, we saw that in the movies. They do that in the movies. I've never seen anybody do it. And to see them embrace it and to see the joy in that moment of that kind of memory they were able to create with their children was extremely, extremely satisfying for me.
That sounds
and
like
that, that's what I mean, all the times that families can create memories when you can see your child in a different light, when you can walk away and say, oh, you know what? He is just two.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was being stubborn, but I realize now he's two and he's learning how to interact and have that independence. Those are always the very best moments for me as a parenting educator and working with families.
Well, that's amazing. And then how can we better educate our young families?
I think when we're trying to educate any parent is letting them know, like, yes, children are not born with a manual, but there are a ton of people who have done a lot of research and have written a lot of books about parenting.
Right.
So it is not something you need to do on your own. And it's not even something you're expected to do on your own. Right. It takes a village. We say that all the time. It takes a village. How do you tap into your village? But first of all, normalizing that we don't all know everything.
Yeah.
And stop making young parents feel as if they're wrong because they don't know. Like, normalize not knowing. Like, none of us, you know, are taking classes on parenting, especially before we become a parent. I mean, some people do, but most people don't prepare in that way, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that if we can get young people to recognize that we're not saying you need help parenting because you're young. Mm-hmm. We're saying we all need help parenting because it's not something that we've done before.
Right.
Right. And so, and how do we, and I think that if we can do that, then we can change young people's mindset about having to prove to us what they know.
Right.
And I think that that's the barrier. That's what prevents people from asking for help because they feel that they've made decisions and choices and now they have to prove to us that they know how to be a parent.
Yeah.
And we're all learning how to be parents. It's just like your job, right? So if you get a job and they say, okay, I want you to go to professional development workshops, they're not saying you're horrible at your job. They're just saying that there's new skills, there's new information, there's maybe a new way to doing it, and we want you to learn it.
Yep.
The same thing with parenting. Parenting is your most important job. So how do you continue to develop yourself so that you have the insight, the knowledge to be able to be the best parent you can be? And it changes from year to year. From, you know, we learn more. And as we learn more, we're expected to do other things and different things.
Yeah. Wow. That, yes. Yes. And, oh, our time is winding down. And I just have one more question for you before we get ready to close out this segment. And that's just, what's your favorite thing about New Orleans?
The people. I love my people. I love them with all of the, just the pettiness. I love them with all of the culture and flavor and swag. I love them from, you know, just the second line. I love the people. The people are unbelievable. I've lived all over and there is no one nowhere that can match the people of New Orleans.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Miss Melanie, for coming in today and sharing your time and your resources with us. For more information on training grounds, Miss Melanie's information will be linked down below. And that's all the time we have today. Thank y'all so much for listening to another episode of the Red Bean Baby Podcast.
Oh my God.
That last part, I wanted to go into another question.